Today on The Whistleblowers, war with Iran or maybe not? President Trump says the time is not right to strike Iran, and that sends Senator Lindsey Graham into a full-blown depression.
There are a lot of headlines out there that are, in my view, not accurate. President Trump's resolve is not the question. The question is, when we do an operation like this, should it be bigger or smaller? I'm in the camp of bigger. Time will tell. I'm hopeful and optimistic that the regime days are numbered.
So where are we? Are we days away from a war, weeks away, months? And what does a war with Iran really mean? I'm John Kiriakou, and this is The Whistleblowers. In the early 2000s, there were seven countries that General Wesley Clark was told the United States planned to knock off in the early 2000s. If you look at the list, the U.S. has gotten its way every single time, except for one, the crown jewel of the, quote, rogue nations, Iran. But that isn't for lack of trying. 40 years of sanctions, covert actions, striking Iranian leaders abroad, Operation Midnight Hammer. Those are just a few of the actions taken by the United States and Israel to topple the Iranian government. But the neocons never leave any job undone. In mid-January, large protests broke out across Iran, triggered by the sudden and huge drop in value of the Iranian currency. Those very civil protests devolved into a spiral of violence as Israeli agents and other dissident forces opened fire on Iranian police, killing hundreds. President Trump was set to strike Iran and give the quote-unquote regime the final push that it needed. And then all of a sudden, he didn't, sending Lindsey Graham into that doom spiral. But why was that? Why was the final coup de grace held back? Well, it seems that had something to do with the Russians, who helped the Iranians cut the plug on the internet and then jam more than 40,000 Starlink terminals that had been smuggled into the country. According to some reports, hundreds of covert agents were rounded up in Iran, effectively ending the protests. But we can be sure the dreams to topple the Iranian government are alive and they are well in the collective West. When will that be and how will it manifest? We don't know. But to answer it, we bring on today's guest. Kevork Almasian is the host of Syriana Analysis. Kevork is one of the world's leading experts on the geopolitics of the Middle East. Kevork, welcome back. It's good to see you again.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm humbled by your words calling me an expert. I myself don't call myself an expert. I'm just a concerned citizen of this world, and especially about the Middle East, where I come from. And I have seen the war in Syria, and I would like for the people of the world not to pass through similar experiences.
Let's start here. Here's what President Trump said.
We're watching the situation very carefully. I've made the statement very strongly that if they start killing people like they have in the past, we will get involved. We'll be hitting them very hard where it hurts. And that doesn't mean boots on the ground, but it means hitting them very, very hard where it hurts. So we don't want that to happen. There have been cases like this where President Obama totally backed down.
But then nothing happened after he said that. In your opinion, why was this strike that was supposed to be imminent called off?
Actually, unlike many analysts and experts on the Middle East, I never said that the strike is imminent against Iran. Actually, I believe that Donald Trump has exerted maximum pressure against Iran through different means, one of which is actively supporting the rioters on the ground, including different intelligence assets, some of which worked with the CIA, others with the Mossad. Also, on the cyber level, they have waged different levels of attacks against the Iranian infrastructure. They have given internet coverage to the protesters and to the rioters on the ground. And also, they have manipulated the Iranian currency. So as we can see, there has been different layers, or there have been different layers of attacks and offenses against Iran in order to create a domestic situation inside the country that the people would revolt against their own government carrying up arms. Because once the killing starts and once people get killed, you know, the cycle of the violence starts spreading, and some people would like to take revenge. And this was a similar scenario which they have implemented in Syria, where I come from. At the beginning of the conflict, for example, there was no insurgency and there was no active fighting between any of the sides involved in the war. However, suddenly, and I would say unsurprisingly, snipers have appeared on both sides and started killing both sides in order to bring all sides against each other. I think in this case, when Donald Trump tried to exert all this type of pressure against Iran, they wanted to create the perception that a war is imminent against Iran to bring Iran to the negotiation table. And when Iran comes to the negotiation table, what are the demands from the Iranian side? The demands are the nuclear program, the enrichment of uranium, the ballistic missiles, and the role of Iran in the region. Now, in order to understand whether the Iranians would accept some of the demands of the Americans or not, we have to understand also the geopolitical posture of Iran, the psychology of the Iranian people, and the psychology of the Iranian leadership here, regardless whether we like Iran or whether we agree with the Iranian leadership or not. But Iran passed through several experiences in the past decades, one of which is the coup in 1953, which was orchestrated by the CIA and the MI6. The Mossad was also involved in it. And then there was the Islamic Revolution in 1979. And most importantly, the war between Iraq and Iran in the 80s, which both sides actually destroyed each other. And Iran passed through several experiences during this time that they have found themselves, for example, in a very dire security conditions, that they don't even have ammunition and weapons to carry on the fighting, to continue the fighting. So they were humiliated at certain times during the recent history, and this led to the hardening of the collective memory of the Iranians. So Iranians passed through really difficult times in the past decades, and they found out that the only way for them to survive in a very, let's say, troublesome and very troubled region is to rely on themselves, to become independent, and to become independent financially, militarily, and also to preserve their sovereignty eventually. However, since we live under a dollar-dominated steel global financial system, the American planners were able to impose harsh sanctions against Iran and really harm the Iranian economy. And despite that, Iran still can function, let's say, in a state manner and control its borders and control its military and preserve its deterrence. This is very important. Iran has had a bigger deterrence against Israel and the United States, especially before October 7. Before October 7, Iran had frontline deterrence capacity against the Israelis, for example, in southern Lebanon with Hezbollah, and somehow also with Hamas, but most importantly, thanks to Syria. And these front lines have been severely damaged after October 7 by the Israelis and the Americans. So the front line the battlefield has moved inside the Iranian territories. And now the Americans and the Israelis see opportunity. Why would we back off? If the Iranians have retreated from some of the files into the domestic affairs, now we come on the offense against Iran. And I think that we are faced with two scenarios now. One scenario is that there might be limited strikes from the Americans if the negotiations fail with the Iranians in order to force the Iranians to compromise. And I think the Iranians will not come into terms with such a compromise if they are under threat, or continue with the negotiations and talks in Oman, which will be held soon in Oman. And I think that the demands of the Americans of giving up on the ballistic missile program, for example, are unrealistic. Because if Iran gives up on its ballistic missiles, the next thing you will see that the Americans are once again with the Israelis are meddling inside the Iranian affairs after Iran giving up on its ballistic missile. Then they will topple the regime in Iran. They did the same thing in Libya when the WMDs were gone, Iraq. Syria has given up on its chemical weapons. Iran doesn't have nuclear weapons, but they are capable perfectly of hitting any spot in the Middle East, including inside Israel, thanks to their hypersonic missile program and also the ballistic missile. So that's what they're trying to get rid of from the Iranians.
Well, that has to be a non-starter for the Iranians, right? Where does this leave Israel? The heat, of course, had been turned up on Iran since a late December meeting between Benjamin Netanyahu and Donald Trump. Netanyahu appears to have been rebuffed, at least in the near term. How do you think he'll try to manipulate the U.S. to strike Iran in the near future? Because the American people certainly don't support another war in the Middle East. He doesn't have to convince the American people, though. He only has to convince Donald Trump.
I think this war or possible potential war against Iran, just like the Syrian war, just like the Libyan war, just like the Lebanon war, were all fought mostly because of Israel in the region and also in Iraq. We have to be honest with our audience. And I think that the mentality in Israel of the domination over the region, the supremacy, that it's a zero-sum game for them. They are incapable of thinking through a different approach. They are unable to give something and take something from the regional players. Israel wants to dominate the region, and they see that after October 7, when they knocked out the leadership of Hezbollah and they have completely decimated the Gaza Strip, and Israel has taken out Assad from Syria. This is, even Netanyahu bragged about it, that we have played an instrumental role in this. So when you see all these developments in the region, if you are in the mind of Netanyahu, this is a golden opportunity for you to carry on another strike against Iran and finish the job. This is what he wants. But whether the Americans will be persuaded or not, this is a question for Donald Trump and his administration, although Donald Trump, in my opinion, is very much leaning toward the Zionist lobby. But at the same time, the war in Iran is not going to be like a trip in the Middle East. Even if he thinks that he can somehow persuade the Iranians after limited airstrikes, that's not going to end well, neither for the Americans nor for the allies of the United States in the region, because Iran, in my opinion, is serious with its retaliation threats this time. If the Iranians feel there is an existential threat against them, they will definitely close the Strait of Hormuz. This will lead into skyrocketing of the fuel and oil prices. Secondly, they will hit the American assets and the sitting ducks of the American soldiers in the Middle East. Yes, they will be damaged, but nobody will emerge victorious from this. Everybody will lose from such a big war in the region. Therefore, the regional players, namely Saudi Arabia, UAE, and Turkey, they know the consequences of such a military adventure in the region. Therefore, they are persuading Donald Trump and telling him, we have to talk to the Iranians and deal with the Iranian case file by file. What Trump is basically doing, he brings all the files of Iran and put it in one basket. And I think that's not a really correct way of dealing with Iran. They have to deal file by file, and they have to take their time to negotiate. You cannot come and impose a deal on the Iranians and say you have to accept it. Iran is a sovereign country in the region. They will not accept the diktats, let's say, of the Americans. And even if they want to compromise, it's not a good image in front of their own people being subjugated by the Americans. Meanwhile, the Islamic revolution, which happened in the 1979, it stands on the ground of countering American hegemony. So even if the Iranians want to compromise with the Americans, they need the correct, let's say, formula, a correct exit for them, so they can also save face in front of their people. And I'm not saying that the Iranians are in a weak position, but I'm sure that the Iranians are interested in compromise with the Americans, because they themselves, they don't want to live in a situation now in the region which is there is an endless conflict with the Americans, especially that it has been proven in the past few years that this region now, after the withdrawal of the Russians from Syria and the Iranians also withdrew from Syria, Americans have dominated West Asia in its bigger chunk of this region. So the Iranians, I think, will contain these let's say, offenses against them, diplomatically, diplomatic, economic, and military, and try to plan for a better strategy in the future. And this requires a compromise with the Americans. Mm-hmm. So I'm speculating that there would be negotiations mediated by Oman, Turkey, and other players in the region. And hopefully, this is just a wishful thinking of mine, that there won't be a war, because people think that war is just a fun game. It's like, it's not. There will be tens of thousands of people will perish, and then imagine the refugee crisis which this could create. If Syria created 15 million refugees, both internally and externally, and it's a country of 24 million, then imagine what would happen if Iran, the central state, is broken inside Iran. Other countries will intervene, will occupy parts of Iran. It will be balkanized. It will be completely shattered. And this will create a region, unstable region, for decades to come. So it's in nobody's interest, even the competitors of Iran in Saudi Arabia and in Turkey. They see that the best way is to talk talk with Iran and not to knock out Iran, because the knockouting Iran means that this region will continue in unstable conditions for decades to come. So I think they also think ahead. Saudi Arabia has its 2030 economic vision. Turkey is trying to play its gas hub and energy hub in the region. So they need more stable, more or less stable region to function as economies. If Iran is, in my opinion, is destroyed, the centralized state is destroyed, it will definitely have negative impact even on the competitors of Iran in the region.
Kevork, stay right there. Don't go anywhere. We're going to take a short break. We're going to continue this conversation. We're going to continue this conversation in just a few minutes. Stay tuned. You're watching The Whistleblowers. Welcome back. Today, we're discussing the potential for yet another strike on Iran and whether or not that would lead to a wider regional or even global conflict. Back with us is Kevork Almasian. He's the host of Syriana Analysis. Kevork, thanks for being with us.
With pleasure.
Kevork, I have to ask you, one of the things that's not being discussed in the Western media is what the potential response from Russia or from China might be if the U.S. and or Israel launch another strike on Iran. What do you think we should expect to see?
Actually, in the past few years, there has been consistent effort between Russia, China, and Iran in order to create regional integration in the Eurasian region. And Eurasia is one of the most important regions in the world. I think Eurasia already stands on three legs. It's Beijing, it's Moscow, and it's Tehran. So if we want to create a multipolar world under which there is a fair treatment for all the countries under international law and under rules-based international order, a serious and real one, I think that the rise of these countries and the promotion of the multipolar world is a net positive for the world. However, in my opinion, the Americans see that the weakest point in this Eurasian integration is Iran. And they need, in my opinion, to weaken Iran to the extent that they could also harm China. Because China buys most of Iran's oil nowadays, since Iran is under heavy sanctions, and Iran is selling most of its oil to China, and China is using it in its competition also, its commercial, its financial, and its production competition against the United States. That's why we see that under Trump, there is a new school of thought telling Trump administration that we have to cool down the conflict in Ukraine, because this is not the smart strategy, fighting against Russia and bringing China and Russia closer to each other. What we have to do is we have to make peace or have good relationship with Russia. We have to weaken China in order to, we have to weaken Iran in order to harm China and focus on our existential threat. This is how they see. But the existential threat is not against the American nation as a nation from China, but rather against the empire that the U.S. has built after World War II, which has become more dominated after the fall of the Soviet Union. This is how the Americans see, on one hand. Mm-hmm. Now, the Iranians have struck a strategic partnership with Russia and strategic partnership with China. But when the talks arrived to having a defense pact, Iranians didn't prefer to have a defensive pact with any of these powers. Now, some people may think this is strange, unless you understand the Iranian mentality again and study the history of Iran, the recent history, and the collective memories of the Iranians. Iranians believe that they have to be self-sufficient, that they have to rely on themselves, even in security and defense. That's why you see a huge research center for manufacturing weapons exist inside Iran. There are huge research centers that they are studying hypersonic missiles and ballistic missiles, and they have, in my opinion, surprised the Israelis and the Americans with their precise weapons when during the 12-day war. That the Americans thought when they dominated the skies of Iran in the first few hours that Iran will be will have to retreat, but the Iranians absorbed the attacks and came back on the offense. Now, whether the Russians or the Chinese will intervene directly, in my opinion, the answer is no. How the Russians and the Chinese would help the Iranians in this case, they have already done it after the 12-day war, which is the delivery of air defense systems and also the spare parts. Because This is something that you know better than I do, that some of the equipments could be hit but could be repaired, right?
Sure.
So they needed the spare parts, they needed the ammunition, they needed more defenses to cover the skies of Iran, especially. This is a very important point. After the fall of Syria in the hands of Jolani and his ilk in Damascus, what happened is the Israelis have now aerial superiority in the region against Iran, that they can fly from Tel Aviv or Haifa all the way in Syria, because Jolani will allow it, and he allowed Israel to destroy the air defenses of Syria. Mm-hmm. And from Syria, the fighter jets will go all the way to northern Iraq in the Kurdistan region. And from the Kurdistan region, they will hit inside the Iranian territories. That's why it was important to knock out Assad before the war against Iran, because were it not for the regime change in Syria, the airspace of Syria was blocked for the Israeli fighter jets.
That's right.
The last time an Israeli fighter jet flew over Syrian skies was in 2018, and it was shut down in 2018. After that, all the bombing campaign by Israel against Syria happened from the regional waters in the Mediterranean or over the Lebanese airspace, and not in the Syrian airspace. So now Israelis have this superiority that they can fly all the way to northern Iraq and bomb inside Iran. That's why Iranians need better air defenses in this case, and better cooperation with the Chinese and with the Russians, something that is already happening. We don't see it because those are secret issues. But I think the Iranians have learned from this 12-day war and what were the weak spots in their military, especially in the air defenses. But how will Iran retaliate? That's a serious question. I think the Iranians will focus on Israel. While everybody is speaking about, of course, American bases in the region, fuel fields, Strait of Hormuz, but I think Iranians also know that the place that hurt the Donald Trump and the Americans the most is Israel. So in my opinion, they will focus most of their retaliation on Israel, especially that Israel suffers from something called the strategic demographic deficiency. And that means that the Israeli people live in small areas, they're overpopulated in smaller geographies inside the Israeli territories, that any serious strike against any civilian infrastructure inside Israel could have huge civilian casualties, something that I think the Israelis cannot tolerate. That's why the Iranians have double interest in keeping their missile program, because they believe that this is a deterrent, against the Israelis and their adventurism with Trump, and also they themselves could carry out such attacks inside Iran.
Gavork, during the protests in Iran recently, the U.S. and really the wider Western media were very supportive, oddly supportive, of a strike on Iran or even a war against Iran. How do you explain that?
Actually, I've been following the mainstream press and also some of the alternative press nowadays who are on X, who claim to be nowadays to be, we are the media. We are going to tell you the truth. We are going to be objective. Unfortunately, even on social media platforms nowadays, we see a lot of sensationalism, a lot of propaganda against Iran. You don't have to like Iran or how they manage their affairs inside their country to notice that there is a lot of hype about war. When it comes to war, they look at it as business. They look at it as profit. And the recent emails of Jeffrey Epstein clearly show how they see the conflicts in the world, whether it is in Ukraine, whether it is in Syria, whether it is in Iran. We, the normal people, the people who have heart and mind and soul and conscience, we don't want to see somebody get killed. But the people who are soulless and they're psychopaths, basically, they see the wars as opportunities for them to generate money, wealth, and influence around the world. And that's what differentiates, basically, between ordinary people and the people who are in positions of power and compromised by the dark forces, basically, which is clearly shown in the Epstein files as well. But this the journalists, the media outlets, the people on social media platforms, those who were very hyped about the war. I truly want to ask this question for them. Have they lived the war? Have they seen a war?
Right.
Have they lived one day under a bombardment? Have they lived one day without electricity, without water, without food? Those are the things that we passed through in Syria. That's why the people who suffered from such wars, unnecessary wars, there was no reason for 600,000 deaths in Syria, and the number of casualties could be more in Iran. So people, before really sensationalizing about such wars, they have to really think about it and feel it on their skin before making any statement, whether it is written or verbal. Because most people, in my opinion, do not think twice before promoting for war, unless, of course, there are people on payrolls. It's their job. And in the mainstream press, unfortunately speaking, it's the institutionally it is corrupted. The editorial lines and the diktats over the media outlets, and their also commitments to the funders. So they have to push for a certain direction. Therefore, I salute people who are in the alternative media and against this type of wars, because Iran is Iran's affairs. How they manage in their domestic affairs is not our business. We're not living there. If the Iranian people want a change, they have to make the change. Any outside intervention inside Iran will create a huge bloodshed in a country with great civilization. And I fear that the target could also be the Iranian-Persian civilization, because what explains ISIS, Al-Qaeda, and other foreign-funded groups inside Syria going and destroying Palmyra, going and destroying Ma'loula, going and destroying all the old and ancient cities and towns, which have no military relevance, right? Or military value. And the reason is because if you erase these artifacts, these ancient cities, you're erasing the civilization. And if you erase the civilization, you erase the identity. If you erase the identity, you erase the belonging of the people to that land. And if you erase the belonging of the people to that land, then why do you fight? Do you fight for your country or for your nation if you don't have belonging to that country? And that's the spiritual war that they play against the people of the region by destroying their civilization.
Kevork Almasian, you've given us a lot to think about. Kevork is the host of Syriana Analysis. Thanks for being with us today. Good to see you again.
Thank you so much. I'm very happy to be with you.
When I was in the CIA, there was one rule of thumb we used to determine how likely a strike would be against a country. It was the number of U.S. Navy assets in the region. When the U.S. was threatening this most recent action against Iran, the closest carrier battle group was near Taiwan. Now those assets have moved closer to the Persian Gulf. They're in the Arabian Sea. So perhaps in the near future, we could be seeing more aggression against Iran. If that happens, we will be the first to report on it. That's our show for today. Thanks for joining us. Please subscribe to my Substack at John Kiriakou. Stay informed, and as always, keep asking the hard questions. I'm John Kiriakou. Thanks for watching The Whistleblowers.